Welcome to the Multifamily Zone, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneur life looks like from the family perspective. Now, here are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro.
Hey, everyone. This is Julia Barbaro, host of the Multifamily Zone podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro.
Julia?
Hey.
How you doing?
Good. We have an awesome podcast today.
We do. No Molotov cocktails. We're just going to be talking about freedom, how it's done the right way. Let me introduce today's guest, Connor Boyack. He's the founder and president of Libertas Institute, a free market think tank in Utah. Named one of Utah's most politically influential people by the Salt Lake Tribune, Connor's leadership has led to dozens of legislative victories spanning a wide range of areas such as privacy, governmental transparency, property rights, drug policy, education, personal freedom, and more. A public speaker and author of one of our favorite 21 books. Connor is best known for the Tuttle Twins books, a children's series introducing young readers to economic, political, and civic principles. Connor lives near Salt Lake City, Utah, with his wife and two homeschool children. Welcome to the show, Connor. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So, what inspired you to write these books?
You know, I mean, look around you. The world is crazy right now. Who wouldn't want to talk to their kids about true principles and foundational ideas? And I felt that several years ago. I just went on Amazon. I'm like, how do I talk to my kids about, you know, free markets and justice and individual rights, property rights? And there was nothing, you know. I remember spending a few weeks just kind of grumbling because I really had this desire to, like, you know, like when you want to teach your kids the birds and the bees, there's like all kinds of books that help you, you know, facilitate that conversation in an age appropriate way. And I'm like, why isn't there anything like that when we're talking about other controversial topics like, you know, individual liberty? So a few weeks goes by, I start to think, hey, you know, that might be like an entrepreneurial idea. So we just kind of dipped our toe in the water, did one book. The response was great, and off we've gone. The Tuttle Twins has really kind of grown into a content empire. It's been incredible.
So I jumped the gun. I was so freaking excited, to be honest with you. Like, give me sort of your background, where you went to college, you know, your family, what your passions are.
Yeah, so I run a group in Utah. They're called think tanks. It's a nonprofit where we work on like educating the public and changing the law. And it's funny, I spend my days researching laws, building marketing campaigns, meeting with attorneys and prosecutors and police and the governor and everything else. And my background isn't in any of this. I was a web developer before I started this organization, which has now grown to, I think we got like two dozen people. We've had a lot of success, but my background wasn't in anything that I do. So I actually, one of my books that I wrote was called Skip College, because I really believe that anyone can gain the skills, especially now online, often free, to do whatever you want to do and build your own life. And so the skills that I have now in like economics and English and marketing and history, I did poorly in all those types of subjects in school. I didn't really enjoy them because they didn't really talk to me about them in a way that made any sense. I couldn't foresee how I would ever use these things. But my background is, yeah, I'm a tech guy. I was a web developer, and I went to school here in Utah, Brigham Young University. I grew up in San Diego. Just along the way, it's been interesting. My life has been kind of one thing leading to another, not this like master planned conveyor belt, like beginning to end, everything is structured. It's been much more organic and, loosey goosey, I guess you can call it, but it's been very fun because that's enabled me to, yeah, just take advantage of these opportunities. It's like kids' books. I now sell a ton of kids' books. I couldn't even fathom a few years ago talking on podcasts about teaching kids about, you know, economics and individual rights. That just wasn't even on my radar at all. And yet here we are. So it's just, it's been a wild ride and a lot of fun.
So what do you think to yourself are some of the real foundational principles that you want kids to really, you know, grasp from the show, from listening to us today?
So it's interesting, right? As parents, we kind of all teach our children the same ideas. Don't hurt other kids. Don't steal from other kids. We teach these like basic rules of good human behavior. And it's only as adults that we start to put these asterisks on those basic human principles of goodness. You know, don't steal from other people. Oh, asterisk. If 51% of people in your neighborhood think it's okay to steal from everyone and raise their taxes and take their money to go do something that they want, that's okay, mm-hmm. right? Don't hurt other people. But, you know, if they're doing something with their body that you don't like, if they're eating a plant that they grew in their basement, then it's okay to bang down their door and shoot their dog and lock them in jail and all mm-hmm. that, right? Like it's kind of weird in my mind that these foundational principles start to have all their exceptions that almost swallow the rule. Mm-hmm. So my biggest thing is creating consistency, that those principles have their application as adults, and liberty means actually having a government that respects those same basic ideas of don't hurt other people and don't steal their stuff. That is the kind of foundation of, I think, good government. It's the foundation of social harmony of people between one another. And as parents, we intuitively know those ideas. We teach them to our children. My message is those same principles apply to us as adults as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, the books, I have to tell you that I was telling my husband, I read them all yesterday because I was so excited that you're coming on the podcast. I have a lot of homeschool friends that absolutely love your books. And I was so impressed by them because they were so simple. They have a great story of these twins. And there the illustration is beautiful, by the
yeah.
way. Very
yeah.
the kids are very in tuned with it. They love to look at it over and over again. But the message is, just like you said, you know, we are the parents, we are their first teachers, and we are teaching the kids that. But sometimes you just need to step it up. And that's what you did. You stepped it up, and you're teaching now thousands and thousands of other children, which is unbelievable. So I have to,
yeah. Please go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I wanted to know if you involve your family into it, like how do you balance that family life? Because I'm sure you're super busy now and yeah. you have a lot going on. Are your children involved in the stories? And what I want to know about where they
I
came
love that
from.
Question. No, yeah. no one has really asked me that question before. I like that. So the twins are based off of my son and daughter, their personality mm-hmm. at various points in the story, you know, the Ethan, the boy, that's a little bit more cautious, a little mm-hmm. bit more reticent. He's very curious. Whereas Emily is a little bit more free-willing and ambitious. She's the one running ahead of Ethan and more energetic. And so my kids like that. They always read the stories. They're my first little beta mm-hmm. test readers. And so they love having, you know, inside access to all the stories. In fact, it's funny. There have been a number of occasions when the final draft is published, the book is published, they'll read the story and they'll be like, wait a minute, you changed this, right? Because they read the earlier drafts and know what the story previously was. My wife is my best editor. She's an amazing editor. And so she helps make sure everything is just clear and succinct. My kids have done several ads for us. And so if you go to our Facebook page for the Tuttle Twins and you go to the videos section, you can see some of the past ads, and my kids have been some of our greatest marketers. They've even helped with fulfillment. We do all of our own fulfillment. We have 11 people who work at our warehouse just shipping Tuttle Twins books. And my kids come and help with that to earn mm-hmm. some money. My wife as well. It's kind of sometimes on Saturday evenings, we'll all go over as a family and just package up books together. So it's kind of a whole family affair. And honestly, I like that because they're getting that much more exposure to kind of not only the ideas, but they're seeing the impact of these ideas on kids all around the world. And they're like, hey, our dad, you know, had a hand in doing that. Look at the amazing impact that's happening. So I really value that for my own kids.
Which one was your favorite book to write?
My favorite book to write, I think, is The Tuttle Twins and the Fate of the Future. Mm-hmm. This was a very ambitious book for us. It's very provocative, basically talking about these foundational ideas of consent. What does consent mean? When we read in the Declaration of Independence, the consent of the governed, what does that actually mean in government? And more importantly, when is it appropriate to use coercion against other people? This gets to the don't hurt other people, don't steal their stuff concept. You know, coercion, you know, we talk about in the Golden Rule book about the non-aggression principle. You should never aggress against other people, but it's okay to defend yourself. But that idea comes more to a point in the Fate of the Future when we talk about when is it okay for the government to turn from a protector of our rights into the kind of a predator where it is bossing us around. It's controlling people. That's when we've reached a little tipping point when the government has become kind of the bad guy and rather than the good guy protecting our rights. But that book was very fun because it's, I think more than the other books, it gets kids thinking or questioning kind of the status quo that we have and really thinking in a provocative way about how could we build a better society? What would we have to fix and change? That was a very challenging one for me to write, but one of the more rewarding ones as I look back in terms of how it ended up.
So I have a couple questions on business building. My wife doesn't like to get into business and real estate, so I'm not going to talk about real estate now, but you have a very similar trajectory to what Jake and Gino did. Mm-hmm. Started out in the basement, started out in the garage, started out with a thought, mm-hmm. and you became an overnight success 6 years later, right? So right. Walk us through that, because you know what? Now you're successful and you're rich, you have to share, right? But I want to know in the very beginning, give me some ideas of how you've scaled business and how you have 11 people in a warehouse from probably just yourselves packing in the garage. How is that inflection, that transformation occurred over the last 5 or 6 years?
I really like that you said giving back, because one of the things that I've really enjoyed, in fact, just a couple hours ago, I was meeting with a gentleman who is about 4 years behind me in a totally different kind of vertical, different industry, but has a very similar trajectory to where I was and I am now where he wants to be. And so it's been very fun for me to be kind of a mentor and share a lot of the ideas and what were my mistakes, how can you avoid them, how can you accelerate? So I really love questions like these. You know, when I got started, it wasn't a business. It was just a little side hobby. It was, I'm a full-time freedom fighter over here. And, oh, we made a kid's book. How fun. And it was almost pressure from consumers that forced me into turning this into a business. I came to see that there was such a profound impact that the first book and later the second book and the third book were having, that I started to recognize that I almost had a duty to get these books out as widely as possible, as quickly as possible. When I saw the impact that it was having and the lives of our customers were better, that they were happier, their kids, they were having amazing discussions with their kids. I just got an email yesterday from a dad who said, my daughter's dyslexic. She won't read any book. She hates reading, but she's reading your books. Mm-hmm. Like for some reason she's mm-hmm. connected with them and she'll sit down and read your books. Those messages have been amazing. And so I came to see after about a couple of years of just slowly doing a couple books that I felt this obligation that I needed to serve the world. And the only way to do that was to really get my affairs in order in terms of making this a business, creating a marketing engine, streamlining our sales operations, our fulfillment, everything so that this could become a well-oiled machine so that I could increase my advertising aggressively trying to push this out there as widely as possible. But it came from this like foundational desire to do good and to increase our presence so that we could increase our influence. It was hard because I didn't really have a mentor myself. I did a lot of watching YouTube videos about how to run Facebook ads and, yeah. you know, how to set up a marketing landing page and all this kind of stuff. And so it was a lot of stumbling for me, but what really created an inflection point was, I think after about the fourth book, we were selling these books as a bundle. And what that meant is after I had a few more books in the bundle, I had a little profit margin that enabled me to start having customer acquisition cost. In other words, I was selling it for maybe, mm-hmm. I don't remember, $30 for the four books or something. And after you subtract out the cost of the actual books and the illustrations and everything else, I probably had, you know, like $15 to $18 left over. And so I'm like, okay, now finally I'm at the point where I can start doing paid ads more sustainably. Mm-hmm. And that has been where our greatest success has been in driving the business is Facebook and Instagram and social ads. I'm trying to find creative ways to engage people. Like right now, one of the biggest ads that people are responding to that I created on a whim just a few weeks ago, I was up one night, I'm like, I wonder if this ad would work well. And it's a square graphic, you know, meme kind of format where the top half is a picture of Karl Marx and the bottom half is a picture of just some kids reading Tuttle Twins books. Mm-hmm. And all it says is problem, solution.
I saw that one.
So yeah. everyone's like, I don't want, you know, Marxism to take off and socialism and communism. And yet kids these days are like increasingly supporting mm-hmm. these ideas. So let me go find out about these books. And mm-hmm. so they go read it. So for us, it's really been trying to figure out how to leverage social media and paid ads to get just a ton of customers coming to our website. We've got a pretty robust affiliate program as well. So, you know, mm-hmm. I'd say 98% of people who read our books become enthusiastic supporters of what we're yes. doing because they are so unique and the illustrations are top notch mm-hmm. and so forth. So then we leverage that to say, hey, go share this with your friends and we can incentivize you. You know, you can make some money along the way. We're still learning. I mean, mm-hmm. by no means have I got this all figured out, but we are at a point where I feel like, okay, now we've got the process in place. I just have to figure out how to, mm-hmm. you know, get this out there even more quickly.
So you've actually benefited from what's going on in the current pandemic and all, because you're actually seeing delineating lines. How do you deal with the haters? Because I see a lot of your emails and I love your emails and I resonate really well with you, but how do you deal with people who are saying, well, I don't believe this. You must have a lot of haters coming at you. How do you deal with that?
Good question. So, you know, we don't have a ton. In fact, when we did our seventh, I mean, we do, they don't necessarily always communicate with us.
I was going to say, do they shut you down and say, I'm not even listening to him? Because I'm not saying, I don't think the things you're saying are controversial whatsoever. It's just the truth. And to me, I resonate 100%, but I could see how people who are writing and doing all this stuff and thinking,
for sure,
thinking of not free market principles would definitely say this, I don't believe in this at all.
I mean, we mostly stay off of one another's radar, I guess is how you'd mm-hmm. say it, right? Because we are on our ads, we're mostly targeting people who already have similar beliefs, right? Who on mm-hmm. their Facebook profile say that they're conservative or whatever. So we're kind of targeting mm-hmm. a more narrow audience of already kind of like-minded people. And then when we're doing those emails, that's to people who've already bought the books. And so they've already expressed like, hey, I agree with you. I want to get these books. So we're not so much talking to all those people. However, there are some instances, you know, like when our seventh book came out, which was based on Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, mm-hmm. there are some big Ayn Rand haters out there. And so someone found out, we got written up in like Salon, which is a big liberal blog, and several other sites. And they're like, oh, they're propaganding kids and teaching them Ayn Rand's ideas and blah, blah, blah. So occasionally we'll get some stuff like that. But I'm a sincere believer that there's no such thing as bad, you know, press and bad attention. Mm-hmm. And so I welcomed it. And in fact, you can leverage that. Like maybe you've seen some of our emails, but when we do get like a negative review on Amazon or mm-hmm. a negative review on one of our Facebook ads, I love taking that little negative review and sending it out to all of our customers and saying, look at this crazy person who says that, you know, socialism is the key to prosperity. And they left this review because it emboldens and endears our crowd to us, mm-hmm. kind of like the flag planting marketing principle, right? We stake a flag in the ground, like, hey, if you agree with us, come over to our side. And everyone's like, yeah, socialism sucks. So if anything, the occasional negative reviews and haters we get helps us mm-hmm. Become more close-knit with our own community, because they're like, oh yeah, we don't agree with that person at all. So mm-hmm. frankly, I welcome some of those people because it's great fodder for marketing.
So my partner has read Atlas Shrugged 3 or 4 times. I read it. I got it to page 400. I had to stop because I thought I was living in an alter. Whatever's happening in that book, whether it's Taggart or Hammond or Danconi or Reardon, I'm like, this is happening today. I don't have to read Atlas Shrugged. And it's just, yeah, the book is just so eye opening. I mean, you know, on so many levels.
You know, I actually read Connor's book.
it's the Cliff Notes version. So
thank
right?
you. So now I can officially say I read it.
You're cheating.
What's Loved
what happens,
it.
What's when you have six
I was
kids
so excited when I got to the end. I'm like, oh my gosh, I read this book.
I now understand.
It just got the important parts, you know.
So Connor, I have to ask another question. I don't want to say, how do you get people over to our side, over to the dark side, mm-hmm. but how do you get people to actually have an open conversation? Because that's the thing we're trying. I don't want to say we're trying to change people. Well, we are trying to change people's minds about stuff, but how do you get that when somebody's so against you and you're writing these books and like, I don't believe you, how do you bridge that gap?
That is a key question. So I, as I said, run a think tank, and our mm-hmm. whole job is persuading the public to agree with, hey, property rights or, you yes. know, Second Amendment rights or whatever. And what I've told my colleagues and other think tanks kind of in the policy world is we are playing defense. What we are doing, which I think is a horrible mistake, is that for decades, us conservative, libertarian, free market type of people have abandoned the rising generation to the propaganda systems of the left. By that, I mean largely public schools. And then we are waiting until, waiting until these kids become adults and have gone through all of this left-leaning indoctrination for us to then start communicating to them these foundational American classical liberal freedom ideas. And it is extremely hard and time-consuming and expensive to invest in deprogramming these kids, these woke social justice warriors, who have this alternative narrative and viewpoint. That's a very difficult, it's very hard for people to change their worldview. And so that is why I am most excited for the Tuttle Twins, is because we are finally starting to communicate with the rising generation and giving parents and teachers tools so that they can teach these ideas and provide a solid foundation to these kids, so that it's really an investment in the future, right? So that in the future, we have more people who understand these ideas innately and deeply because they learned them that when they were young, rather than learning about how America sucks and all the founding fathers were horrible racists and, you know, capitalism is you know, evil and blah, blah, blah. We need to invest in competing for the hearts and minds of the young. And to everyone who says, oh, it's just propaganda, you're trying to propagandize the young, I say, this has been happening for decades. It's just, would you rather help parents? I mean, you can say the same thing about a religion, right? Like parents communicating their own religious ideas and what they believe is truth. You know, that is proper. That is fine. That's okay. And we have, you know, the Bible or whatever, other resources for parents to kind of transmit those ideas. We have completely failed. Yeah, we've abdicated that responsibility, and other groups have failed to empower parents with the tools and resources to facilitate those conversations. So that's how I see our work with the Tuttle Twins. We're not trying to directly propagandize any children. We're trying to enable parents to transmit the ideas to their children that they already believe in and agree with. We're just giving them a language to talk to their children about those ideas, have discussions, because so often, I can't tell you how many parents I talk to that email us or whatever, and they're like, I wish your books were around, you know, when I was raising my kids, because now they all went to college and they're all, you know, they're AOC, Bernie Sanders, you know, type people. And they lament the fact that they're, it's kind of like Christians, for example, whose children become atheists. They have that similar, you know, sadness for their children deviating from a path that they are following. And so we're just trying to enable those conversations so that parents can do the teaching and transmission of ideas that they believe.
You know, you have such a gift, a storytelling, getting to the point. I'm so thankful that you took that idea. It was just an idea in your head to write a kid's book, and you took it and you did something. Because a lot of us have ideas, right? But we don't do anything with them. So thank you for that. And, you know, our oldest daughter is going to be a senior in college, and she is still with it. Super thankful. And it's funny because I actually had her read a couple of your books. I was excited. I said, you have to read these. She loved them. Cool. But, you know, it's funny because for all these years we've been homeschooling, and I, you know, every year I'm like, all right, I got to find some government books. I got to find history books and it's a challenge. It's really a challenge for us to find something that we, you know, and it was so exciting when we started reading them. So I just really want to thank you. Yeah, no, really. And what's the future look like?
So thanks for saying thanks, and you're welcome. And honestly, when I wake up each morning, you know, dopamine is a real drug, right? Mm-hmm. Our brains respond to it, our bodies innately produce it. We kind of get hooked on it. And I'll tell you, it is a drug for me every morning to wake up and look at my phone and be tagged in various Instagram stories and emails that we're getting and all this kind of stuff of parents just saying thank you. It is so motivating, you know, because we don't get many haters, as we just said. They don't really always communicate with us. And so we're just kind of getting like bathed in gratitude. And then to your question, people saying, we want more. Yep. What's next? Right. But it is stressful. I'm extremely busy. It's been very much a challenge as we've exploded to accommodate that growth and still be able to kind of pump out more content. I will say, looking forward a year, two, 3 years, I see Tuttle Twins becoming kind of a content empire, like as ubiquitous as something like VeggieTales might be, mm-hmm. kind of a household brand or mm-hmm. name. That's how we see the Tuttle Twins getting within just the next 2 to 3 years, because our expansion has been so aggressive. We're doing, you know, a cartoon. We're just starting to do an animated cartoon full season, and then hopefully continue from there. That's super exciting. We're doing more kids books. We're doing more teen books. We're probably going to do some history curriculum because that's sorely lacking right now. Mm-hmm. We're creating baby board books like the ABCs of free markets and all that kind of stuff. So we're like young kids to old kids, mm-hmm. Everything in between. And frankly, for the parents as well, who often yes. are getting educated along yes. the way.
I agree with that one for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It's very common because yeah. most Absolutely. Of the parents are like, I didn't learn this in yes, school, or completely. Maybe I did, but they didn't mm-hmm. talk to me in a way that it made sense. You know, when you learn economics in high school or college and you're a little required econ 101, mm-hmm. they're showing you all these boring graphs and charts and supply and demand. And you're like, but economics is really a story of humans awesome. Interacting with one another, right? And so when you present it in a more authentic way about how we exchange and buy and sell and all that kind of stuff, anyways, mm-hmm. But yes, we are producing a ton of content in the next year or two, and really trying to rise to the occasion because there's such a strong demand right now, especially with the surge in homeschooling. Mm-hmm. Right. We just have, our customers are reaching out saying, give me more, give me more. And mm-hmm. so we're just trying to run and produce it.
I love that. Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsors.
Hey, Wheelbarrow Profits family. Are you struggling with ways of teaching your kids about money and financial literacy? Gino, I think we have something to help them. Tell them about it.
We've been hard at work creating the Jake and Gino Youth Academy. The Academy takes a deep dive into good money habits, setting up a budget, investing, taxes, the difference between an asset and a liability, and so much more. This is a great opportunity to spend time with your children, to be their role model when it comes to money and investing, and learn how to set them on the right path to financial success.
If you want more information on how you can become the next Youth Academy member, visit www.jakeandgino.com/education to begin your journey to financial freedom.
As we like to say at Jake and Gino, people with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
Connor, let's talk about the teen books for a second. I want to get into that a little bit. I haven't read them yet, but we've ordered them. So I'm excited. I'm so excited to get them. Tell us about them.
So, you know, we started doing the kids books because my kids were that younger age, and so was Elijah's, who's the illustrator. So we thought, you know, 5 to 11 year age range was kind of the sweet spot. But of course, kids get older. And after 2, 3, 4 years of doing kids books, we started getting a lot of our customers saying, hey, my kids are a little older. Are you going to be doing anything? I was a huge fan growing up of the choose your own adventure books, right? Like if you want to go into the cave, turn to page 84. If you want to run away, turn to page 32. Because you get kind of your own participation in the story. And so when we thought about doing teen content, that was the first idea that came to mind. Like that would be a fun format to do. So we call our series Choose Your Consequence, because choices are all about consequences and outcomes. And our books teach kind of political and economic ideas, but through more like, you know, adventure stories. And so the children's books, because they're shorter, we have to kind of focus more on the ideas. It is a story. There is a plot and so forth or whatever, but we're very heavy on the ideas. The teen books are longer, and because they are longer, we can kind of space out the ideas and not be so heavy on the ideas. So they're fun stories with all kinds of different outcomes that the teens or even preteens can choose from, and then see like, hey, here's a choice that has economic relevance. If you choose this one, there will be a certain consequence if you choose something else. And so they're kind of learning almost through observation what some of these outcomes to these types of political and economic decisions might be. So it's been fun. It's gotten a fantastic response, and they're just super fun to be involved with, because it's kind of that longer format that we can do to tell more of a kind of an adventure story that seems to be clicking with the audience. So that's been great.
So Connor, you're a lifelong learner. I can tell you've got the growth mindset. It's just constant learning, constant education. Do you have any other ways? We talked about the penny candy books. Anything else that parents can be, you know, sharing with their kids, whether it's for economics, money, finance, freedom, any other resources that you'd like to share with your children?
So that's tough. My kids are still young, and I feel like there's just not a good answer to that question when it comes to younger kids. For teenagers, it becomes a little easier. The Uncle Eric books are fantastic. I typically will recommend for teenagers, they can start looking into Liberty Classroom by Tom Woods. That's at libertyclassroom.com. It's more for, like, you know, teens, college students, adults, learning all sorts of things about history and Western civilization and logic, and he's got a ton of great content there. But that's part of kind of the value proposition of what we're doing, is that so much, like, you know, for history, my kids have been reading the Rush Revere series by Rush Limbaugh about American history. But honestly, those books are half as much about Rush as they are about American history.
He's a marketer, you know, bro. It's all about marketing, right?
Exactly, right? And, you know, they do all right. You know, they talk about history, and there's some fun stories there. We watch for history the Liberty Kids that was done years ago. That's really fun to watch. But it seems so sporadic. It's like pick here and there and a little bit, right? It's like you have to kind of scratch around and like, what's out there? So my vision for the Tuttle Twins is that we are going to have soup to nuts beginning to end. Like, hey, if you want to teach your kids to be well-rounded and understand history and logic and economics and political science and everything, here's the brand that you want to follow. And then within there, we're going to have all this, like, age appropriate different types of content to choose from, just so that it's kind of off the shelf, easy to trust, easy to follow. And some, because parents are busy, right? Yeah. Especially when you're homeschooling, you're the responsibility of hunting down all the curriculum choices. And so we're trying to make it as easy as possible for parents who share kind of our worldview and ideas, where it's just like, oh, Tuttle Twins, okay, give it to me, right? Exactly. We'll just use your material and run with it.
So you should see my credit card, basically, with Amazon the last week and a half. It's just like, bing, 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 bing. We got curriculum. There's four right now,
right?
We only
have four.
Oh, only four, right? So it's just like Amazon, Starbucks, Target. Oh, that's what Jake likes to call the SATs. So, Connor, I am a parent. I'm on the fence right now. Why should I be buying the Tuttle Twins, and why should I be investing in my children's education? That's, you know, for me to answer that is, I see what's going on around the world. Just give me your, you know, sell me on that. Why should I be investing in my children's education?
Oh yeah. The current events is the greatest, like, sales opportunity we have for our books. Parents are looking around terrified at the world and the, you know, mobs and the riots. I just watched a video this morning in San Jose shutting down the freeway, and they're going around bashing in people's car windows after stopping traffic. And a lot of parents are nervous, and they want their kids to avoid the same zombified mentality that so many of these hipster woke social justice warriors have had, but they don't know how to do it. They don't know how to inoculate their children against this disease of democratic socialism. And so our books are the inoculation. Our material is a way for parents to give their children kind of almost a freedom vaccine against these viral anti-freedom ideas. So, you know, again, we're simply trying to enable conversations that parents already want to have with their children. A lot of these parents, they want to talk to their kids about free markets, property rights, justice, equality under the law, ethics, morality, all that kind of stuff, but they don't know how to talk to an 8-year-old about that. Maybe the parents, not maybe, oftentimes in our experience, in talking with all these parents, oftentimes the parents themselves feel inadequate in understanding those ideas well enough to then articulate them and teach them to their children. And so our books are kind of a crutch for those parents to say, hey, let's read this book together and then discuss it, so that that burden is taken off of their shoulders, but they feel that they can check that box of saying, okay, good, I'm talking to my kids now about these ideas that I cherish.
Yeah, it's important. And that's one of the beauties of homeschooling, is that we do learn with them. And, you know, we didn't learn as we were younger, I really didn't. But one of the things I do love in your book is the end, where it gives a glossary with really important words that were throughout the book, but also the discussion questions. And those are the things that you could talk with your kid about. So it's not like, well, what'd you think of the book? It was good. You know, what'd you learn? I don't know. You know what I mean? There's totally. The end of the book is excellent because it keeps that dialogue going. And you even have work. You even have activities on your website, which is super helpful as well.
Yeah, that is the goal. It's not mm-hmm. just a one and done. Okay, I read the book. Let's mm-hmm. move on. It's like the thing that I enjoy most is when we get the feedback from our customers about, in fact, just the other day, what was it? I got an email from a dad. He was, they were going through the grocery store and mm-hmm. The dad said something offhand about like, holy cow, this candy bar is like triple what it was when I was mm-hmm. younger. And his little 8-year-old was like, the creature from Jekyll Island strikes again. You know, but it's like they're finding the application yes. to modern day about these foundational, and that is so huge because we always mm-hmm. talk about those who don't learn from the past are condemned to repeat it. Like we've all heard that quote, and yet existing material and curriculum out there doesn't really help kids bridge these mm-hmm. foundational ideas to the modern world. And so we're trying to, I guess, be the connective glue in the middle so that parents can help their kids kind of open their eyes and kind of see the relevance of these principles to the modern world.
I would love to see a homeschool curriculum just for homeschoolers and have a whole curriculum for them. I think that's your next step. Not trying to create more work for you. I know you've
well,
got
that's what I
want
to talk about for a second. As much as the two of you get more successful, there's less of you at home.
That's not true.
So I want to know how you balance that. Because it is a challenge for you out there working, and you know I'm home with yes. the kids. But how do you balance that? Because it's exciting what you're doing. You know, I yeah. say that with my husband; he gets excited to do things.
It's your sole purpose. It you is. Finally found out what yes. you love to do. Exactly. It's not oh, yeah. work, and the better you get at right. it, the more you monetize, and the less you worry about money. Which is pretty yeah. ironic in life, because money becomes meaningless yeah. once you find your sole purpose and you find your mission in life. And all of a sudden, mm-hmm. you work 10, 12 hours a day, and it's not really work anymore. Mm-hmm. It's
absolutely.
A lot of fun. So that's the irony. I moved down to Florida 3 years ago to retire. I'm working just as much as I was before, and I really enjoy what I do. I love what yep. I do. And what I've done is I've tricked my wife into starting a podcast and to help me out at work so we spend more time together. So, you know, I ain't that smart, bro.
That's great. That's smart. You got to find those ways to weave in the family into your life. And I, yep. I really like what you said because – for me, it's the same way. My work is not work. It's the whole thing. Like, if I don't know what the quote says, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life, I think is what it says. Yeah. You know, my work is my passion, is my hobby. And confession time right here. I basically have no hobbies. Like, I'm kind of a boring person in the sense that
yes, I understand.
Any spare opportunity I have to work, I'm yes. going to work. But it's connected to mm-hmm. that innate goal of I feel this anxiety to serve more people. I feel pressure. I feel this obligation to be doing more, to do more good. I don't care about the money. We never got mm-hmm. into this because of the money. I honestly really don't care about that part at all. Mm-hmm. It's nice. I'm not going to mm-hmm, complain sure. to be successful, but I've seen the transformational power that this material has had on families, and I'm addicted to that drug. And so I'm an addict. I guess that is the point. But you know, I'm the type of addict where there are people who are like cocaine addicts, but you would never know it, right? They do just enough where they can like get by and like hold down a steady job. I guess I'm kind of like that in the sense that like I have work-life balance, right? You know, my wife still sees me, my kids still see me. We do family stuff.
They still remember what you look like.
Exactly. They know I might have this kind of habit and addiction, but I can quit at any time yes. I want. I promise. You know.
Oh, so similar, you two.
Yeah. So it's but my thing too, kind of like you, maybe doing mm-hmm. the podcast with your wife here. It's I want my family to kind of be along for the ride and understand the vision and the goal. It's not just Connor's going to work to make a bunch of money or Connor's going to work because he's addicted to working and gaining more power and prestige. It's Connor's at work because he's trying to help even more people. And that's a sacrifice that our family has kind of, you know, seen as important. They get that there's a higher purpose to what I'm doing. It's not just dad is at work. It's like, hey, there's a bigger picture here going on.
So when I first started Jake and Gino, everyone would ask me, what do you do? And I'm like, I just teach real estate. And for a couple of years, my wife would say, what do you do? What do you do? And I tried to explain it to her. And it finally clicked on a day in December driving through New Jersey traffic, going to a meetup, about 40 people there, I present. And I did a pretty good job, I thought, right? Afterwards, people are coming up to my wife, and I guess she can tell you the story. People going, oh, thank you for sharing him. He's changed my life. And I'm like, you see? And then I got her hooked, and all of a sudden, she's like, I like what you're doing. I see what you're doing. Let me go do some, you know, because I was a life coach at the time and a business coach. And, you know, those are used as, oh, wow, those are just foo-foo. But when you really start helping people out, and it does become a dopamine. When I get texts from students saying, hey, I closed the deal, or hey, can you jump on a call and help you? That can be really addicting, because it's you're actually out there helping other people, and it's not just about you. And all of a sudden, it gives you more purpose in life, because it's not just about making money. But ironically, like I said, the more people you help, the more money you're going to make. It's just getting better at your craft. So
well, I think that too is important with if you have a spouse at home, to let them see those people. You know, for Connor, I'm sure your wife sees those emails that come in to thank you. I'm sure she does.
I'm sure he sends a few to her. Yeah. See what I did today?
Here's the drug fix for you for the day.
Because it does pass on. And I know I do. I can speak for myself. I do want to encourage him to do more because of that, because it is unbelievable when you help somebody. It's just, it's you want to do more, right? So does your wife, how does she encourage you?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, my wife is full of ideas, and so she's often sending me links and things about like, hey, what about for your next book? Or even like on our policy side of our think tank, what we do. She's got a really good ear to the ground in communities, especially like homeschool communities and stuff like that, about, hey, here's what I heard, or you should think about that. So kind of an extension of me in the sense that eyes and ears. But I guess kind of connecting the last question of this one, like, the way that I've achieved work-life balance or try to maintain it is by delegating. Like now I have a full-time person running our ads, and I've got the 11 people. And like, I used to do all the fulfillment when we started. Every night I'd just turn on Netflix or something and package up things. And it got to the point where I couldn't, so I had to hire someone else. So really just trying to delegate and hire and grow so that I can offload things and preserve my most scarce resource, which is my time. And in the sense, so connecting that to your question of how my wife encourages me, it's also kind of enabling me to know that things are okay at home. I'm almost, in a sense, able to delegate a lot of the home stuff to her. She's my partner. She's got her role and I've got mine. And I have more mental kind of peace knowing that our children are being well cared for and educated, and you know, we're talking and on the same vision, but she's able to kind of shoulder more of that burden so I can focus here, and then we can kind of grow together. And that honestly, to me, like I've thought over time, like if she died or something like that, and I had to, you know, we got divorced or whatever, if suddenly I had more of that burden, oh my gosh, like, I don't know how I would handle that.
You would hire a lot of people.
A nanny.
All my husband.
Let's not go down that road again. Yes, absolutely. I know.
Absolutely. Our podcast just doubled in length, because now we can list out all the things that the wives do. But it's very true. And so the fact that I can do that delegation, she can be that support, is the best thing for me, because then I can worry less about home stuff. Not that I want to neglect it or not be aware or involved, but it is tricky to find that balance. But that honestly to me is the best, so that I know that I can kind of be laser focused on my mission.
One question I have, I noticed that you said when you had to let go of certain things and hire other people. I know with my husband too, in order for him to scale up the business, that was one of the things that he had to do. And it was a huge challenge.
Business question. I like that. Off the personal. Let's stick to the business
question. I don't know
what's
going on. Okay, really, I think it's good. The books. Connor, I think your books really made me super
They're
smart.
Infectious.
Yeah. So how, when you had to let go of those, first of all, how hard was it for you? How did you hire the right people? And did your business at that point scale up?
That's another 45-minute question to answer right there.
Here's the 45-second version. No, it was
give
tough.
Us the kids version, you know, like the kids book version.
There you go. I'm a perfectionist, you know, and especially when it's your business, your baby. It's like a parent having a baby. Like you're going to hire that babysitter or nanny, and like, here's the 18 things I want you to do to make sure it's all done perfect. So it was hard. It's been hard to let go. I hired an assistant for the first time last year, And oh my gosh, transformative in terms of how much I've now realized a year later I can offload and delegate. But at first it's like, am I going to have enough work for her? What can I delegate? But dipping the toe in the water and hiring that person and finding, oh, they're competent. Oh, they did it well. Oh, I can trust them. Progressively has given me more opportunity to just say, okay, now do this. Okay, now do that. Now I can give you that. So it's been kind of incremental over time, but absolutely it's allowed our business to grow, because the more that I can focus on creating content and marketing and doing what I am more suited to, whereas kind of the more repetitive tasks or tasks that can be taught and trained and so forth,
systemized.
When I can, yeah, exactly. When you create those systems, I can preserve my time so that I can do the higher thinking and the bigger picture stuff, which allows us to grow and expand. So that's been hard for me to learn. I mean, I'm a think tank guy. I was a web developer. I mean, I didn't have a manual for doing any of this. I've stumbled my way through it, but it has been a challenge, but I've seen the wisdom in delegation, and I've kind of forced myself to continue to find other areas where I can offload things.
Joel, want to give a big recap and then I'll give my recap.
Well, I just want to encourage all of our listeners, whether you have little kids or not. I really think these books are incredible. They're the Tuttle Twins. This whole series is incredible. The teen books are on their way, and I'm excited to read them. I just want to thank Connor for being on the show and sharing his story, because it's important when we think about something, we have an idea, to actually take action. You know, Connor, you had this idea for this kid version of your, what you're teaching your kids anyway, and you did it. You started with one book, right? And it just moved on from there. And your ideas came, and you took action again, and you continued to do that. And in the process, you helped so many families out in the world, and I'm so, so thankful. So I just want to encourage you to keep going. There's a lot of us out there that are just thrilled and thankful, and we're excited to see what comes out of this.
Connor, how can the listeners get a hold of you?
So TuttleTwins.com is where you can learn about the books. We got a contact page if you want to reach out. We got a very chatty customer service team, including myself, who loves to respond to people. And, you know, we're always open to ideas. In fact, so many of the ideas for our books come from people who've, you know, found out about what we're doing and said, hey, consider a book on this, or, you know, weaving an idea like this into your next book. And so we social media, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, we're all over, and just really want to be engaged out there, because we see ourselves as serving and connecting with those families. So we'd love for people to follow what we're doing at the Tuttle Twins, and happy to engage online as best we can.
Love that. So it's from a Brigham Young graduate to a web developer, to a think tank, to a children's book author, one, and now he's got a dozen, to an amazing story of I'm a do this and I'm a do that, to an entrepreneur who's starting to delegate. It's really the American dream personified, really putting hard work into it, having an idea and taking massive action and serving others. That's what it really comes down to. When you start serving others, you get a lot out of it. And then you know what? You start figuring out how to make money. And that's the best thing in business, is serving others and making money. So we just really want to thank you for being on. And honestly, to all our friends out there who are listening to this, don't walk, run. TuttleTwins.com. Pick up the books. You're not going to regret it, everybody.
Thanks to both of you.
Yeah. Thanks for being on,
Connor. Thanks, Connor.